While you're getting your coffee and taking your seat, I want to really thank Rabbi Helfgott. He was the only speaker who did not come in over Shabbos. Baruch Hashem, really, it's amazing. Everybody made it here for Shabbos. But I have to give really a personal hakaras hatov to Natty for all the wonderful work he does in cooperating in the joint program between Yeshiva Chovevei Torah and Torah Motion and Trisha also. And I want to express my hakaras hatov to YCT and for all the wonderful work they are doing and providing opportunities for learning in all kinds of different areas. Rabbi Helfgott, of course, is the head of the Department of Bible and Jewish Thought at Yeshiva Chovevei Torah, and he teaches at SAR, one of the prominent high schools in New York, in Riverdale, and he recently joined the Pulpit Rabbinate in Teaneck, in the growing community in Teaneck. He now has a shul there, so he's a very busy, you know, person, and we appreciate him, you know, coming to Toronto in and out for the day to teach. And without further ado, Rabbi Helfgott. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. Rabbi Kelman, the thing that you didn't mention was I'm missing my four boys sledding this morning. And I know. If I would have known, it would be such a great snowstorm because they're all, my boys are 12, 11, 8, and 4. So they're having a I got tired, a little bit tired. My wife, as I told my wife, if we would have had, you know, 12 kids, they would have been all boys also. It seems the boys run in our family. But it really is a pleasure to be here. It was a little touch and go last night to get to Toronto, but made it last night at midnight. And I want to thank my hosts, the Myers. I saw them for 5 minutes last night. I want to thank the Myers last night. And I'd like to thank Torah in Motion for inviting me again. And I'm here wearing my YCT hat, YCT Rabbinical School, which is a modern Orthodox rabbinical school in New York City. That's been, this is going to be our 12th year in existence. And we're trying to put out rabbis who are open Orthodox, modern Orthodox, and sensitive to the community, and are modern Orthodox rabbis, but are serving Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people as a whole. And so it's a pleasure to partner with Torah in Motion, which is a wonderful organization. They do great things, and really keeping alive the light of open-minded Torah here in Toronto. I hear from time to time you have controversies, but just keep learning, and that's the most important thing. So I wanted to talk today about an interesting topic that I think sometimes divides Jews in the Orthodox community. I want to start with a story. I was a young man. I went to a yeshiva high school, which was very, quote-unquote, good in Gemara. Looking back now, I realize how it wasn't so good in Gemara either from a pedagogical point of view. I'm a teacher now, but I realized that it was at least considered good in Gemara. In Tanakh, it was terrible in terms of the Rabbeim that I had, who were wonderful people. I have nothing against them, but they didn't have any training in teaching Tanakh. They had no training in anything in terms of pedagogy. And so we would read a Pasuk and read a Rashi, We didn't even ask Makashel Rashi. We didn't even ask what was difficult for Rashi. That was how bad our educational program was. I'm sorry? I'm not going to mention. It was not Chad, and it was not Or Chaim, and it was not in Toronto. So, it wasn't that much different from any other yeshiva high school at the time. Today, it's, thank God, you know, it's a totally much different experience for my kids and the kids that I teach, I hope. And one of the things that I remember is, even though I was I was a very good student, you know, generally people who go into chinuch are the goody-goodies. They're usually the kids who do well in school rather than the kids who are always in the principal's office. And generally that's part of the challenge sometimes, because we do well in school, to connect to kids who don't chop and don't understand things on the first try. It's actually a very interesting pedagogical challenge if you're a teacher. And I really was looking for something else because I did enjoy reading the stories of Tanakh when I was a little kid, and I felt desiccated, if I could use that word, spiritually, as I was learning Tanakh in high school. And there were two things that, so to speak, were my saving grace. Number one is, one morning I walked into Lincoln Square Synagogue. I'm sure many of you have heard of it. It's a very prominent synagogue, which is where I grew up. And one morning I got up early and I walked into the Hashkama Minyan in the Lincoln Square Synagogue, and I davened there. I was 14. And after the shiur, there was a young man. His name was David Silber, who is teaching today as well, Rabbi David Silber. Before he was married, before there was Drisha, before all the things. And he was giving a shiur on Tanakh. And it was amazing. And from then on, I started going. And it was amazing because he used literary analysis of the characters. He used psychological analysis. He opened up a world of serious Tanakh study. He introduced me and others to all kinds of ways of thinking, which were really eye-opening. The second saving grace was that my principal, who actually liked Tanakh, but really couldn't do anything in the school because, I don't know, principals didn't have much power then. I don't know, maybe now they have more power. But the school was very stuck in a certain time warp. My principal started giving me sheets of this woman named Nechama Leibovitz. I'd never heard of Nechama Leibovitz. I was 14 years old, and it was really interesting. And I started to do the sheets, and I started to read the Iyunim, the studies, and also a whole world of Tanakh opened up. And all kinds of people who I'd never heard of, you know, you're a 14-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, all kinds of people I'd never heard of, you know, because in elementary school, you generally don't do too much Buber, and you don't do too much, you know, Benno Jacob, and you don't do too much, you know, Shadal and stuff like that. You do Rashi, maybe a little Ramban. All kinds of interesting people. And I didn't know. Who did I know? I thought Benno Jacob was a Hasidic Rebbe. You know, I didn't know who these people were, but I certainly knew that they were very, very, very wonderful readers of text, and they inspired me to connect to Tanakh. And as time went on, I certainly became much more into Tanakh, and, you know, it's certainly my first love in addition to everything else in Jewish studies. When I was in my last year at YU, in college, before I started Smicha, so there was a wonderful, very, very excellent Rebbe in Gemara. His name was Rabbi Yehuda Parnas. He's still teaching, who was a very big Lamdan, but very, very Haredi, I guess, in terms for YU. I'm not very Haredi, but for YU, he was Haredi. He was more right-wing. And he loved to chepper. He loved to dig it to the students who were much more modern Orthodox. Every Thursday, he would give a Hashkafah talk. And even students who did not go to to his shiur, to his class in Talmud, went just to hear it. It's, you know, you're 21 years old. You want to, you know, rile up a little bit. So from time to time, I would also go. My friends would go. So one week, he gave an entire talk attacking Nechama Leibovitz. Gave an entire talk, Zichrona Livracha, who eventually I studied with for a whole year and then a couple of summers. And he gave an entire talk. And what was the thrust of his talk? The thrust of his talk is, she's a very sincere woman. She's a very learned woman. But she quotes people who are not Orthodox. And therefore, since it's not, as he said, Al Taharat HaKodesh, since her teaching, even though primarily it's based on Parshanut, it's primarily based upon classical Jewish sources, Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Rashbam, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Nitziv, Hirsch, even though it's primarily based on classical Jewish sources, what we would call Orthodox traditional Jewish sources, who believe in Torah min HaShamayim, believe in the divinity of the law and the origin of the Bible in from heaven through Moses. But the fact that she quotes people like Benno Jacob was a Reform rabbi in Germany, who was the head of a synagogue which was very actually radical Reform, very extreme Reform. But Benno Jacob was also a great fighter against biblical criticism and a wonderful reader of Tanakh, a wonderful reader of the Bible, a great literary chush. He had a great sense of the literary analysis of the Bible. And Martin Buber, who of course was far from an Orthodox Jew, but certainly was a wonderful reader of Tanakh, which And Nechama, who grew up in Germany and could read it in the original and could read the wonderful translation of Buber and Rosenzweig, which really gets the cadence of the Hebrew language, she made great use of that. And she was one of the first people who introduced the notion of when you teach a class, compare translations. And it's a wonderful teaching technique to see how does this translation translate it, the King James versus Buber versus this one versus that one. And so since Nechama quotes people who are not Orthodox, and she quotes non-traditional sources, including sometimes from time to time Gentiles, in terms of her parshanut, in terms of her commentary, therefore it is really inappropriate for a traditional-minded Jew to use the commentaries in the Nechama Leibowitz. Now, of course, that riled everybody up. And of course, to me, it was, you know, very, very disturbing because really, as I said, that which had really connected me to the study of Tanakh when I was a young man, when I was 13, was really being exposed to the work of Nechama Leibowitz and my, and to hear my, who eventually became my dear friend, Rabbi David Silber. And so I, until today, I think that you will see, from time to time, you'll see that this issue blows up, that how can this person's commentary be used in the yeshiva? How can you have it in the Beis Medrash? You have to hide it, right? There's a school in Israel which has, you know, there's books that are in the Beis Medrash, and then there's books in the back that are hidden, and it says on them, Svarim Shelo Al Pi Derech Chazal, you know, books that are not following the approach of the rabbis, and they are for Yechidei Segula, they're for the special people who have access when they, you know, are not going to be tainted, which is, you know, certainly a point of view. So I wanted this morning for a couple of minutes to explore the position from a traditional point of view that says that we should and we can learn from everybody, and that even though it may, again, obviously the more Haredi point of view is certainly a point of view that's out there. It's certainly a point of view that I'm not here to trash. I'm just here to recognize that there's another point of view. I wish that the same courtesy was given by our co-religionists about that point of view. So I'd like to explore with you some sources and maybe take a couple of questions. And if, you know, somebody should put their hand up when it's 11:28 so that we don't go over for the next shiur. So I'd like to start with two very famous sources that really reflect the Rishonim, the Gaonim, the Gaonite opinion, as well as the Rishonim. One approach in the Rishonim, which became very dominant and certainly I think is at the core of any modern Orthodox Bible study. Maimonides, in his introduction to the Shmona Prakim, Maimonides, of course, is one of the great, you know, poster children, if we wanted to use that word, of using non-Orthodox, non-Jewish, Gentile sources in order to expand one's horizon and understand Tanakh. I mean, one could say, bigadol, without getting even into details, Maimonides' whole point of view of reading Tanakh, anybody that's ever read the Moreh HaNevuchim, the Guide for the Perplexed, is totally influenced, not just how you read this pasuk or that pasuk, but his entire approach to reading Tanakh is through the lens of non-Orthodox, non-Jewish sources, meaning Aristotelian philosophy. That's how he interprets Tanakh. Tanakh, which says that God walks in the garden, and Tanakh, which says that God has emotions, and God, Tanakh, which says that God changes his mind, and Tanakh, that says God gets angry and gets happy, is reread and farteisht and farbessered for the Rambam, totally reread in light of the prism of Aristotelian philosophy. That's the whole purpose of the Moreh and the Rambam's entire point of view. But the Rambam makes this explicit in a very famous passage at the introduction to the Shmoneh Prakim, the 8 chapters on Masechet Avot. If you look in source number 1, Maimonides tells you there, and I'll translate, in source number 1, this is the Maimonides' introduction to his commentary on Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the fathers. Okay? So if you look at source Aleph, if you don't have... okay. I made 35 copies, so please share if there's not enough. Okay. Maimonides says, V'dasha hadvarim ha'ele, הדברים אשר אמר בפרקים האלו ומה שיבוא מפירוש אינם דברים שבדיתם מעצמי. Rambam says, don't think that I created it on my own, the things that I'm going to tell you. ולא פירושים שחידשתים, and not things that I created out of whole cloth. אמנם הם עניינים לקטטים מדברי חכמים ומדרשות. There are things in this commentary to Pirkei Avot that come from the rabbis in the Midrashim, v'Talmud, and in the Gemara, the Talmud, v'zulatam michiburim, and other books of the rabbis, meaning the Mechilta, that. Umidivrei ha-philosophim, as well as words of the great philosophers, gamkein, ha-kadmonim v'chadashim, both classical philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, and the modern ones, the Arab philosophers that Maimonides was familiar with. Umichibure harbe b'nei adam, as well as from others. Ushma ha'emet mimi she'amara. The famous Rambam's phrase, there's two versions of it, either shma ha'emet, which means listen and internalize truth from whoever said it, or kabel et ha'emet mimi she'amara. Accept the truth from anyone who said it. Meaning, don't look at who said it, look at what was said. And, of course, that is a problem, you know, for some people. What do you mean? You have to know who said it. Did he say it? Did this rabbi say it? Did that rabbi say it? But the Rambam takes the position that what's important is the truth of the content. And here, remember, the Rambam here is not talking here about, you know, going to your, you know, mechanic, your Irish mechanic or your Italian mechanic to fix your car. The Rambam here is talking about Pirkei Avot, talking about ethical behavior, and what do we learn about Pirkei Avot? How do we understand when it says, "Hevi, you know, kenei lecha chaver," and the Rambam gives a three-tiered structure of what it means, friendship, totally based on Aristotelian ethics, the Nechamian ethics, meaning the Rambam here is talking about Torah, and how we interpret Torah through the lens of Kabel et ha'emet mimi she'amaro. A more even striking example of this comes prior to the Rambam. There's a very famous Spanish North African Rishon named Rav Yosef ibn Aknin. This is not the Rav Yosef that the Rambam wrote the Mora to. This is a different Rav Yosef ibn Aknin. So he's talking about how you write Peirushim on. And the discussion, he tells a story. Listen to the story, which I'll translate. V'chein asah. So he lives in 1150, and he's telling us about traditions that he has from Rav Saadia Gaon and Rav Hai Gaon, which are 200 years prior to this. He's telling us about the later Gaonim, the pillars of what we know as traditional Judaism, as we know and love and practice today. V'chein asah lifnei Rav Saadia b'feirushav ha'arviyim. If you look in Rav Saadia Gaon's commentaries, which were written in Judeo-Arabic, u'mishum oto inyan amru rabotenu, and therefore the rabbis said, kol ha'umer davar chokhma, anyone who says over a piece of wisdom, v'afilu b'umot ha'olam nikra chacham v'chayamin l'mosro, even if it's from the Gentiles, you must pass it on. U'bekesher imze ha'nagid b'sifro ha'osher. And, for example, Rav Shmuel HaNagid, in his book, he sometimes quotes from the commentaries of the Christians in interpreting various psukim. And he tells the following story. Rav Matzliach ben Albatsek Dayan Sakhli. He told me the following story. Bivo'o mi Baghdad. When he once came from Baghdad, and he had in it stories about Rav Hai Gaon. Listen to the story about Rav Hai Gaon. Shiyom echad nizdamein by yeshiva ha-pasuk, shemen roshi al yani roshi. Very strange pasuk in Tehillim, which nobody knew what it meant. Just like today. You go into a day school, you ask them, what does this pasuk mean? I don't know, let's look on Google. Right? You would have to... No one knows. It's a very difficult pasuk. What does it mean? Shemen roshi al yani roshi. V'nechleku ha-misubim b'biuro. So the rabbis had a debate what it means. V'tziva Rabbeinu Hai, so Rav Hai Gaon commanded at Rav Matzliach, she'alech et ha-katolik shel ha-notzrim. He told him, go to the Catholic priest of the Christians. V'yishalu mahu yodea b'biur ha'pasuk zeh. Tell them, say over what they say in the Christian circles. What's pshat in the pasuk? In Tehillim. Today, you know, we would say, let's see what Dawood said. Let's see what, you know, what Westerman writes on Tehillim, on Psalms. So he says, I'm sorry? Right. We would go to the Anchor by whatever it is. So they went to, they didn't have the books of the Catholic, so, but they had a real live priest. V'rab be'enav. So Rav Matzliach was very frum. He didn't like this. I'm going to go ask Teich from the Catholic priest. U'kishira'a zal, when Rav Haigon saw shekashel lav hadavar al Rav Matzliach, hochiach oto leimor. He gave him mussar. He said to him, hein ha'avot v'kadmonim ha'chassidim, v'hein lanu l'mofet, the great, our forefathers, and the early rabbis, the early ga'onim, who are our mofet, who are our star, who are our guidepost. V'hayu sho'olim al shonot. They often would ask non-Jewish scholars what the meaning of words. V'ala biurim etzel b'nei datot shonot. Afilu, this is a Hebrew translation of Judeo-Arab. Arabic. They didn't use the word datot shonot. That's not a medieval term. But ala datot shonot afilu roei tzon ubakar kayadu. They even used to ask. The Gemara says they would ask the roei tzon, the shepherds. The halach elav v'shalov amrolo sheetzlam b'lashon hasurit. If you look in the Syriac translation, mishcha derishia la ad reshe, whatever it means. So these are two very famous sources that certainly point to the notion that one. That the great rabbis, the Rambam, Rav Haigon, Rav Saadia Gaon, and others certainly would often use, in terms of interpreting and understanding Jewish sources, they would use occasionally. Now, obviously, it's not like they spent all day in the convent, but they would, from time to time, use external sources to traditional Jewish sources. And again, those you'd like to look, very famous Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchot Kiddush HaChodesh, towards the end of Kiddush HaChodesh, the laws of sanctifying the new moon, Maimonides, after he's given a whole long explanation about how you calculate all the various things, he says, look, the Rambam has this fascinating historiography, as they say. Maimonides says in Halakha Chafdalid, V'tam kolelu acheshbonot m'vdei ma mosifim minyan zeh m'vdei ma gorim. The rationale behind all these calculations that I've made in these laws of sanctifying the new mood, v'heichneu da kol davar v'davar melo advarim v'harayal kol davar, and all the various proofs, hi chokhmat ha'tkufot v'gimatriot shechibru b'chachmei avan svarim harbei. These are the books that the scholars of Greece, the mathematicians, they have written many books. V'hem nitzim achshav bidei ha'chachamim. They're in the hands of the scholars. Aval ha'sfarim shechibru chachmei Yisrael, the books that were written by Jews, shayu bimei ha'nevi'im, which go back to the prophets, mibnei Yisachar, lo higi eleinu, it never came to us. U'me'achar shekol eilu advarim v'rayot brurotem. Once, clearly, if you read the math books of the contemporary scholars, it's clear that they're correct. There's no mistake. V'yev shar la'adam laharher achareim. You shouldn't even doubt them. It's very strong language. It's very religious language. Ein laharher achareim. Says Maimonides, Ein choshim la'mechaber. We never worry who wrote a book. You don't care who wrote the book. If the content of the book is true, forget about what the author was. Was he Jewish? Was he not Jewish? Was he pious? Was he not pious? Was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? It's a very interesting, right? Whether they were written by prophets or they're written by Gentiles. Anything which it's clear, the meaning and its idea, and we know its truth. We don't rely on whether the person who wrote it or said it or taught it. Ela al haraya shenitgalta v'hadam shenoda. So the Rambam is consistent in his attitude that when it comes to learning ideas across the board, whether it's in halacha kiddush hachodesh, whether it's in musar, and we saw Rav Saadia going, whether it's in Tanakh, we don't care who said it, we care what is said. Is it true? Is it convincing? Does it add to my understanding of the words before me or not? Now, of course, there is a counter source that one could, which I'd like to spend a few minutes. I'd like to learn the story with you, which, of course, is the source which many of us, because, you know, on the other hand, you know, on the one hand, we feel a great affinity to that. On the other hand, there's the other hand. What's the other hand? The other hand is, let's say I was running a school. So we also want role models, right? So it's a real, right? I wouldn't want to have an axe murderer who was very smart be my math teacher, right? I wouldn't want to have somebody teaching Tanakh who denigrates the Tanakh, even though he might be a brilliant literary theorist, right? I mean, we have a challenge here. I understand where the more traditional point of view is coming from. I mean, anybody who's ever hired teachers knows that you want to have role models. You want living textbooks, as Heschel said, not just texts. So here we have that struggle. And the struggle is implicit in a famous Gemara. Turn the page in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga, the famous story, of course, of Rabbi Meir, who was a student both of Rabbi Akiva and the student of Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, the great heretic of Jewish history. Anyone who's ever read A Driven Leaf by Milton Steinberg, right? As a Driven Leaf, excuse me. Acher, the Gemara called him Acher, the other one, after he left the fold, after he went off the derech, as they say today. And he started, you know, violating Yom Kippur, and he started... But Rabbi Meir continued to study Torah from the heretic. So the Talmud, after quoting the story, the Gemara says, how could Rabbi Meir do it? If you look on the next page, from the Steinsaltz edition. V'Rabbi Meir, heichi gamar Torah mipume da'acher. How could Rabbi Meir study Torah from the mouth of Acher? V'amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Yochanan, my diktiv, it says in Sefer Malachi, ki sifte kon yishmeru dat, because the words of the priest contain knowledge, they will hold on to knowledge. V'Torah yivakshu mipiyu, and you should seek teaching from his mouth. Ki malach Hashem tzvakotu, for he is the angel of the Lord. So the rabbis, in a very famous comment, said, im do meharav lemalach Hashem tzvakot yivakshu Torah mipiyu. If the rabbi is a malach, if he acts like an angel, then you should seek Torah from him. V'im lav al yivakshu Torah mipiyu. But if he's not a malach, you shouldn't seek Torah from him. Amar Reish Lakish, how could Rabbi Meir continue to study from someone who went off the derech? He's certainly not a malach. He might be a nice person, but he's not a malach from a traditional point of view. Somebody who's riding a horse on Yom Kippur, whatever, or the equivalent of, you know, someone, he's not a malach. So the Gemara gives a number of answers. Amar, says the Gemara, Amar Reish Lakish, Rabbi Meir kara ashkach, v'darash. He found another pasuk, meaning there's a countervailing answer. It says, "Hat oznecha ushma divrei chachamim velibcha tashit leda'ati." It says, "Listen to the words of the rabbis or smart ones, and your heart should always come leda'ati to me, God. Leda'atam lo nemar ela leda'ati. You should always remember, human beings are human beings. You can learn a lot from human beings, but always remember, stay connected to God. No cult worship." No hero worship, no Rebbe worship. Don't get so caught up in your veneration for this person or that person. We don't ultimately venerate a person, we venerate God. And so one can distinguish. So here you have in the Gemara two voices. One voice says you can never learn anything unless the person's a malach. The other voice says, hat oznecha, listen carefully, but make sure that you can divide between the person and what he's teaching, which I think is an interesting, you know, kind of tension here in the Talmud. And the Talmud goes on. Rabbi Chanina says he had a different post. And just parenthetically, I just want to, it's a fascinating thing. For those who've ever studied the Guide for the Perplexed, the Rambam starts the Guide for the Perplexed with this pasuk. Hat oznecha ushma, ve'al tashit libi ledati, and only listen to me, God. It's interesting. The Rambam, Maimonides Dafka, chose this pasuk to start the Guide for the Perplexed. Because he knew that he was going to say radical things. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Chanina Amar Mehecha, Shim'i bat, Uri'i v'hati oznecha v'shikhi amechu beit avich. Another passage says, listen carefully, but forget your thought. Meaning, listen to the content, but you know what? Distinguish between the person, right? We often do that in politics, right? Bill Clinton was a horrible human being. Certainly not a role model that I want my children to follow in terms of how he used people and abused people. But he might have been a very good politician. He might have been a great, you know, leader, right? We do that all the time. We distinguish between the content of what the person does and what the person himself does. I wouldn't want him for my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, but on the other hand, in terms of content, he may have been an excellent president. And you can have many, many fold examples of that in politics and many other areas. So the Gemara says, the Gemara itself is bothered. Kasha kro hadadi, the psukim are contradictory. So one answer the Gemara says, lo kasha, ha begadol, ha bekatan. Now what does that mean? Begadol, bekatan? Begadol, katan could mean, on a pshat level, could mean adult versus children. When it comes to a child, they're much more impressionable. And the kind of role models that they have are more important than when an adult, someone who's 40 years old, 50 years old, is different. That could be, or the Gemara here is talking about gadol and katan, the way we use the term. Like a gadol, somebody who's really steeped in Torah, he can sift between the person and the content, others not. And the Gemara gives another explanation, meaning, there's a lot of tension here. There's no conclusion. The Gemara says, Ki ata Ravdimi, when Ravdimi, who lived much later, came, Amri b'Ma'arava, and Ma'arava in Eretz Yisrael, they said as follows, Rabbi Meir achal tachla, ushada shichla labara. So Rabbi Meir, he ate the fruit, and he threw out the pit. So he knew how to discern. Darash Rava, the Gemara now gives another pasuk. Rava, even later, my dichtiv el ginati go egoz yaradati lirot bi'ibei hanacha. I went down. Lama nimshlu tamechamim la'egoz, lomar lacha, ma egoz ze. So too, an egoz, afalpi, a nut. Afalpi shemeluchlach betit ubitsoa, even though the nut is often covered with dirt and excrement. Ein mashe betocho nim'as. That which is inside is never corrupted. Af tamid chacham, a scholar. Af al pishas sarach, even though he went off the derech. Ein torato nimneset. His Torah is never corrupted, and therefore Rabbi Meir felt he could still learn. Now the Gemara tells another story. Okay. Ashkeche Rava le'eliyahu. Rava found Elijah. Amarle ma'ika avid HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amarle ka'amar shmaitza mipume dekulei rabbanan. He's quoting Torah from every rabbi except for Mpume de Rabbi Meir lo, but from the mouth of Rabbi Meir not. Amar le amai mishum de kagamar shmaitse mipume de acher, because he was learning from the mouth of Acher of Rabbi Leshem. Amar le, so the Gemara responds to God. This is a wonderful midrash. God doesn't get the last word. Amar le amai Rabbi Meir rimon matzah. He found a whatchamacallit? He found a pomegranate. Toko achal klipato zarak, and he threw out the whatchamacallit? He ate the fruit and he threw out the rind. So in this Gemara, you have all the tensions playing themselves out. Should we study from somebody? Should we not study from somebody? Now, of course, this is very different than reading a book. What we're talking here is about direct contact with Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir and Acher had direct contact. And that, you know, raises the bar of the issue. It's not reading, you know, a commentary written by some non-Jew 300 years ago or written by a non-Orthodox rabbi in a newspaper or whatever, or a research paper. So the whole thing is very, very different. I would say Bichlal has nothing, very little to do with simply reading others, but here is the tension expressed here in the Talmud. Now, this issue came to a head in the 1960s, and then again in the 1980s. In the 1960s, Rabbi Yehuda Cooperman, who was the head of the Michlala in Israel, started publishing some essays on Tanakh, on the Bible, and he wrote some very strong words. And it was clear that he was attacking Nechama Leibovitz, because he said that he's going to write essays that only follow Al Taharat HaKodesh, that only follow citations only of traditional Jewish sources. And also at that time, there was also another great rabbi, his name was Rabbi Yehuda Nachshoni, who published a book called Hagut, the Parshiot HaTorah, who basically said the same thing in his introduction. And it was clearly a shtach. And Nechama never responded at that time. About 20 years later, Nechama got a letter from a rabbi in Tel Aviv. His name was Rabbi Yehuda Ansbacher, who was a rabbi of a shul in Tel Aviv, and who was, she knew him. And he also, in this private letter, he said, you know, I love you, Nechama, but why do you have to quote Buber, and why do you have to quote this one, and why do you have to quote that one? So she wrote a letter that was published a number of years ago, and it was translated into English. So if you look at the last page, here's the translation of the letter of Nechama to Rabbi Ansbacher. It was translated by one of my students, who it was originally from Montreal, and he now lives in Israel. And if you look at the third paragraph, on page 108 here. But let me turn more to the point. It's also, if you want to see the original in Hebrew, when Nechama died, they published a book called Pirkei Nechama. And at the end of the book, there's a whole series of letters that Nechama from Nechama. More to the point, let me turn to the latter part of your comments. It is true that I cite the words of people who are not observant of the mitzvot. If their words seem correct to me and can reveal the light of Torah and display its greatness and holiness to the student, I work according to the principle, which is from the Rambam, Kabel et ha'emet, or Shma et ha'emet, mimi she'amaro. Accept the truth from wherever it comes. What can I say? Beno Jacob was an extreme reformer who served in the Sontag Gemeinde, which was a reform, as I wrote in the footnote, a reform congregation that held prayers on Sunday instead of Saturday, and certainly transgressed an enormous portion of our holy Torah mitzvot. In addition to the fact that he was an anti-Zionist, which was very bad in Nechama's eyes, of course. Nechama used to give us a tremendous amount of mussar. How could we go back to America after learning with her? She even got mad at us when we finished class and we would start to walk out of the class and we started to talk in English. We were all English speakers. So she couldn't understand how, you know, in class, you talk Hebrew. You have to talk in Hebrew even when you walk out. Which, you know, she couldn't imagine, like, you know, couldn't imagine that, you know, people were Americans or Canadians. Yet I learned from his books, which is, I don't know how to pronounce it in German, An Eye for an Eye, has excellent proofs that an eye for an eye, according to the simple meaning, refers to monetary compensation. And his book about exegesis and biblical critics, Exodus, is a forceful work against the documentary hypothesis. More than from many books written by bona fide God-fearing Jews, his claims against biblical criticism as proofs of their frivolous and their errors, no one has ever written things better than them. Even Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Zatzal. As difficult as it is to mention the name of this Gaon together with Beno Jacob. As well as Yisachar Jacobson, Alav HaShalom, and Dr. Mariel, who wrote a book on the Torah. Many of my friends, among them Rabbi David Karlebach, who for many years taught with me in the seminar in Jerusalem, the Mizrahi Seminar for Teachers, also learned from his works. He opened our eyes to see things which we had not seen before, and therefore towards a true understanding of Torah. Professor Kasuto, who was God-fearing and scrupulous regarding the mitzvot, what we would call today orthoprax, said a number of things that were far from my belief in Torah Misinai, and I won't be part of their dissemination. And therefore I will not pay heed who said it, but only to what is said. There is no need to say that Buber was not a good Jew according to the normal understanding of this concept. I knew him, and he was not in any way a man after my heart. Absolutely not. The story that the Gentile wrote seems to be slightly far from the truth. At the end of the day, this was not an innocent offhand remark, etc. There's a story there. But look a couple of lines later. But what I can I do? And as I and many religious teachers learned many correct things from him in Tanakh, especially the whole concept of the key word, the Mila Mancha, that every teacher today, worth his salt, teaches their kids, the Leitwerter, and the deep meaning that its application in Torah hints to. And although our Midrash already recognized this principle, Ne'amar Kan, V'ne'amar Sham, Mida Keneged Mida, it is nevertheless the merit of Buber, and even more Rosenzweig, Franz Rosenzweig, that they expanded this concept and revealed several places that I have not found in any early sources. I will not withhold this good from students by hiding this from them. And Nechama also was a very big stickler for truth. She did not believe the way some Rosh Hashivas today, who are very conflicted, they will cite sources, but they won't tell you who it's from. Yesh gadol echad, yesh chacham echad, or you sometimes read in certain, you know, you have it in Rav Hutner, Zichron Livracha, where he quotes Rav Kook, but he's not going to quote Rav Kook. Or he quotes Vesely, who was one of the students of Mendelssohn, but he won't quote him. But he says, Yesh chacham echad. Nechama wasn't into that. If she quoted someone, she was truthful. In truth, even non-Jews at time, though in my opinion rarely, and again, this is her very Zionist, you know, Jewish. Today, I don't know if she would say the same thing. Offer an interpretation that is good and sharp and proper. And even if Barbanel in select places brings the works of a Catholic bishop and accepts his opinion over the opinions of Radak and Ralbag. Several times I showed Talmid HaChacham details from Benno Jacob's important book. And they thanked me and rejoiced of his discovering a great treasure. Should I then hide the name of the author? This I cannot do. As the Gemara says in Horiot, who are those whose waters we drink and whose names we don't mention? This is my opinion, which I have held to my entire life, etc., etc. So here you have, again, Nechama, you know, in the 1980s wrote this very vigorous defense of her Shita. And again, as I said, till today, we have two very different, approaches within the Orthodox community. There is a very dominant voice, or I don't know, dominant or very strong vocal voice, especially within the more Haredi circles and Chardali circles. Everybody knows what that phrase means today. Chardal, Haredi Lu'umi, people who are Zionists, but, you know, they're fundamentally, or as my friends used to say when I was in Israel, we used to call them an inverted Krembo. Krembo is the Israeli, you know, means inverted, means they're white on the outside, but really black on the inside, which is an inverted Krembo. But fundamentally, from their perspective, we should really take a more Haredi position on many of the challenges that we face. And certainly in Talmud Torah, we should not quote sources which are not traditional. On the other hand, you have a classical modern Orthodox position, which I think Nechama articulated very strongly here, which is rooted in Rambam, the Gaonim, the Rishonim, and even many Achronim, who are very traditional, from time to time would do it. If you read the works of people like, you know, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Ktava Kabbalah, and others, they often will quote people who would not necessarily get Shishi on Yom Kippur in their commentary. And when they agree with them, they agree with them. Now, of course, you know, as I said, the question of, and this has to do, of course, with citation. The question of role models in the classroom, because we're not just about ideas. We're not scholars. We're not just sitting in a seminar in, University of Toronto or in YCT or anywhere else or in Michal Herzog. We also want to impact on children. And Shmirat HaMitzvot, we want to try to impact. So we do have that tension. And sometimes children don't understand the difference. And so that's a different issue. That's a pedagogical question that is different than when I write a commentary or I write a Dvar Torah in the Canadian Jewish News or in somewhere else. Is it okay? Am I going to quote something that's, so to speak, not traditional? So here, these are the sources. I mean, I very strongly feel that, you know, I'm very much a fan of Kabbalat Ha'emet Mimisha Amaro. I'm very much a fan of the attitude that we can learn from everybody. There's a tremendous amount of material that can be gleaned and gained from our engagement with the world. And, as much as we would like, you know, there are people who discovered things that we didn't discover, whether it's in archaeology, whether it's in literary analysis, whether it's in diktuk, whether it's in philology, whether it's in ancient Near Eastern studies, whatever it is that can enrich our study of Tanakh, enrich our study of Gemara, enrich our study of every Jewish source. And even though there are voices in both in the classical tradition and in the modern tradition that argue against it, I think that there are other voices that are counterbalancing and countervailing. I wanted to leave a little time for some questions if anybody wanted to ask on any of the stories or anything of the comments, or wanted to present a different point of view, please
feel free to ask questions. Bakasha. First say your name and nice to meet you. Oh, wow. Okay. For posterity.
I won't say my name again.
Yeah.
Pedagogically, then, we learn about Kabbalah, that we should only learn it when we're 40 years old, have a family, work, etc. Do you feel the same, then, that we should have a very good grounding in our own tradition before we start exploring others?
Well, see, I take a different tack than that. Pedagogically, for me, it's not a question of age. It's a question of context, meaning it's a question of, again, I'm just talking myself. There's a difference between an offhanded comment, meaning if I walked into my class in SAR, my 10th grade Tanakh class, and all I did all day was quote the Anchor Bible, and all I did all day was quote Beno Jacob, I think I would not be being responsible as a teacher, because I'm also trying to teach them Parshanut, I'm trying to teach them skills, I'm trying to teach them how the greatest minds in our tradition studied the Bible. But if occasionally I mention something, that's a whole different way. And I also, whenever I quote somebody, I always tell them who they are. Meaning, so if I'm going to quote Beno Jacob in my 10th grade class, I'll say, you know, Beno Jacob was a Reform rabbi who obviously lived a life very different from what I believe in, had a very different attitude, but he has a wonderful insight here. And I think that as we teach kids, especially high school kids, they can be sophisticated, they can be discerning. We can teach them how to integrate outside knowledge and at the same time have a core. So in my class, I hope my class in Tanakh is Tanakh and not Parshanut. That's a different issue. I hope that I'm not teaching too much commentary anyway. I hope the text speaks for itself. But when we have a problem, when we have a dilemma, when we see a beautiful insight, so I hope it's coming from Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Rav Yoel Ben Nun, whatever it is, and hopefully sometimes Natty Elfgott. And at the same time, I will quote from time to time things, but I'll put it into a context. It's all about context. It's how you present things. And yes, I am not going to present Ramban as equivalent to, you know, the same thing as Beno Jacob. That I want them to know who the Ramban was and who Beno Jacob was. So I think that's the pedagogical question. It's not age as much as context here. Okay? That's not, because, you know, the whole business of Kabbalah, 40 years, has to do with the Shabbatai. That's a whole different issue about misusing ideas. Here it's not a question of, you know, if he has a good insight into that ayin tachat ayin really means mamon, really means money. It's not a question of, oh, this is beyond the ken of a 10th grader. That's not the issue. So it's all about framing, as we say in education. It's all about how you frame it and integrate it, and also the kind of person that you become. It's the same thing with all these things. You know, if you make everything a big deal, then it becomes a big deal. Okay? Just like, you know, I always, you know, like when you learn the Rashbam, you know, the Rashbam interprets tefillin, you know, not literally in his commentary. So if you make the biggest deal in the world, oh my goodness, as opposed to, you know, there's Pshuto Shel Mikra, there's Midrash Shel Mikra, there were different approaches. The Rashbam put on tefillin the next day after he wrote that commentary. I always tell them that. And, you know, like, don't get so caught up in our preconceived notions of things. Yeah.
Hi, Warren Goldstein.
Hi.
I'm just wondering if there's a red line that we should not cross, because you said the Rambam
falsehood.
Said...
falsehood. That's the red line. Never say something false in your class that you don't believe.
So the specific question I was going to ask was, because you said the Rambam said it doesn't matter if it was a good guy or a bad guy, and, you know, there was a very bad guy like Adolf Eichmann who did these experiments on...
You're asking a very good question about medical ethics, right? All right.
How far
do we go with that is, you know, is obviously I think in the medical ethics there, because there we're talking about crimes against other people. I think that there is, you know, a very serious thing. But, you know, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know. And I think that it raises a very good ethical question. But I think you have to distinguish between crimes against other people. But, you know, you read, many of us read novels and read books and read, you know, research done by people who probably were really nasty people to their wives and their children and cheated on their spouses. And, I mean, they also hurt other people, obviously not to the extent of medical experiments of Nazi, you know, Nazi Germany. But I don't know where the line is, but I'm sure in my life I have read research papers in all kinds of fields that I took, you know, I studied in college and graduate school, of people who were probably not nice people, but we did use their, you know, research. And we do appreciate, I'm sure everyone here could come up with but the Nazi thing is, you've given me the extremist, of course. An extremist, I don't know what I would say.
Hey, last question.
Yeah.
Shana Kravitz.
Hi.
Hi. So, two things. One is, I'm really grateful to Nechama and other authorities who have done the winnowing for me. But should I be reading Benno Jacobs myself?
I mean, that's a... I mean, it also depends on your... If you're the kind of person... Again, I don't know you, so I'm just talking out loud. If you're the kind of person that, you know, if you read a book, if you read, you know, like Christopher Hitchens this week, oh, I take off my kippah. Next week I read Nathan Slifkin, I put on my kippah. If that's the kind of person you are, or whoever, I don't know, Lawrence Kellerman, whatever, you know, if that's the kind of person you are, that every time you read something, you know, you kind of oscillate, then probably better not to read those things. But if you're a person who, you know, has a strong foundation, knows where they are, knows the roots, and, you know, then, again, I'm an open-minded person. So I generally think that more knowledge is better than less knowledge. Hiding from things is worse. But in Hachanami, if you really feel that, then, you know, it's probably better not to go down that route. But I don't think most of us, I hope most religious people's religious connection is not that, you know, ra'u'ah, as they say in Hebrew, is not that
shaky
in terms of their, you know, their roots. So, you know, just like about Israel, there's some people, like, you know, in America, you have the equivalent of Fox News here, right? Fox News or MSNBC, right? So there's some people who only read what they agree with. If that's your, and anytime they hear something they don't agree with, it shakes their, you know, their beliefs. Okay, so then only read Fox News or only read MSNBC, only read left wing. But if you're a person who is, you know, has a certain rootedness in what you believe and what your basic values are, then I think you can stand the vicissitudes of the winds of ideas of other people.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll hear him again at 2:30.